Welcome to the Queer Arabs podcast. This is Alia.
This is Nadia.
And we have a guest on. We're so excited. Can you introduce yourself?
Hey, everyone. My name is Clarissa Vitar. I'm an oud musician and composer, Palestinian based in California, born and raised, actually.
and you're a singer now.
Oh, yeah. And you're a singer, too.
Oh, well, yeah. And I guess now I'm trying to add that one to the list.
Yeah.
That's true.
When did you start playing?
When I started playing oud, actually, when I was 18, which was kind of late. Oh. But I started playing guitar when I was like 11.
Yeah.
And that was my first instrument, and like kind of I think helped the muscle memory out before starting the oud.
Yeah.
I grew up around a lot of Arabic music, so it was just like, you know, I remember trying to make my guitar sound Arab and be like, wow, none of these chords sound Arabic and blah blah blah, what's going on? And then I realized like Arabic music doesn't really use chords and stuff when I started studying oud. So like I had always really wanted to jump into the oud. I remember asking my dad like, blah blah, go get your oud, I want to learn. He was like, no. So it's like I didn't have that opportunity to actually learn it until I got to college.
Oh, okay. So going from guitar to oud, like what was the transition like? I mean, what are the main distinctions?
So the main difference is that the oud is a fretless instrument, meaning there's no frets. So we have 24 notes per octave in Arabic music rather than just 12, which means you've got half sharps and half flats. And where the fret is on the guitar actually blocks a note. That's like where the half flat would be, or the half sharp. So the fretless instrument allows you to like reach all these microtones. And that's a very important thing in Arabic music. So that's one major difference. And also another huge difference is that like the music in terms of like Western music versus Arabic music is organized completely differently. Arabic music is not concerned with harmony, which was why I was saying, you know, playing chords that would sound like along to Arabic music, it wasn't really as much relevant to our tradition versus like learning the maqamat or the different scales. So in Western music, you might have a major and minor scale and variations of the minor scale. And in Arab music, you have so many scales and families of scales that you have to learn way more than just three or four, right? And that's where the depth of the system like lays, and that's where you have to that's what you have to learn. I think it's just organized completely differently. It's why, you know, you don't see a strumming chords on the oud like you do on the guitar, right? You play like individually.
I have not a musician literacy question. What's a fret?
Yeah, no, it's a good, because like I might be saying some things like over people's
heads. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, a fret is basically like, you know, when you look at the guitar and you see those like metal lines
on
the neck part, which is where the musician is putting their hands down, those are the frets, right? If think of a piano, right? A piano has keys, and there's the black keys and the white keys. To get these like microtonal notes in Arabic music, you would almost like need like a red key in between the white and black key. That doesn't exist, right? But the note exists, but like because the West doesn't use it, they didn't care to make it in the instrument.
Right.
So like when you have like the Arabic keyboard players, they actually have like a switch that turns one of the flats into a half flat so they can play those notes and stuff like that. So there was like adaptations, but that's why also what was adopted in terms of Western instruments into Arabic music was stuff like the violin, because it was fretless, so you could play all the microtonal stuff, right? It's just a completely different way of organizing music. That's why people are like, oh, music, it's a universal language. You know, it's not really actually a universal language, because like people will listen to what we're doing and like they have no clue why like this Ammo screaming Allah to me. And they're just like, oh, why is he yelling at you? And it's like, no, because he heard a modulation and he heard like something that you didn't hear because you don't speak the language type of thing. You know, it's just organized differently. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When I first started, I grew up playing like Western classical on violin and then joined an Arabic band that was run by a Syrian composer. And then I remember having to change the strings to G D G D, and that was a challenge. But it was right. it's such a incredible, enriching experience. Especially like being Arab myself and just being like, okay, I need to explore this music theory that's been like hidden away from us by our education system here in the US.
For sure.
Or
I mean,
like,
that's
yeah, thrown into the semester of world music.
Of world music. I mean, that's yeah. literally how I found the oud. I took a world music class because like I thought
wow.
that would sound cool as like a prerequisite for my, I was a bio major. And I literally was like, oh, world music class. And the and it was taught by this white guy. And it was like, it's not this white guy. It's Dr. Scott Marcus. But it was a white man, you know, like he's
yeah.
a white man. And like, I was like, well, okay. You know, and he pulls out an oud in class and is like, oh, anybody that wants to learn, just come to me after class. And I was like, oh, I know
oh,
what
wow.
that is.
Yeah.
I walked straight in. And it was just because I took a world music class that I like happened to even be put in a space where there was somebody who would be able to teach me. Because being in diaspora, we don't have access to that, to these like traditions,
yeah.
to learn them all the time. So like, I felt super lucky that I happened to go to a university that happened to have one of
yeah.
the largest middle ensembles, that happened to have, you know, an expert in Arab music who just, I happened to take his class. And like, it just, it happened very randomly, you know, that changed so many things in my life. So it's interesting, but I do feel that like very deeply. And that's why like, I like to also teach, because I do feel that it's an important, you know, part of cultural preservation to be able to just continue having people learn the tradition and like learn
yeah.
maqamat, learn songs and now, and for me too, you know, when I go and perform and I play for people and like, I want people to play, sing along and like, and know what the heck I'm doing. And I think about like, you know, like when only my grandma's getting it, I'm like, what happens when it's not only my grandma's not here and like no one's getting it, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
those fears of mine actually. So it's one thing I really do like to teach and, you know, keep that going here.
Yeah, speaking of that, what are, I guess you've probably performed in so many different contexts, like what are some examples of that, like the range of context you've been in?
Yeah, I found myself in so many different types of gigs. I feel like when you're a working musician, you have to find you find yourself in some of the, you know, early on, very just, you know, I'm trying to take gigs as just to find work. And then
yeah.
eventually I was found myself in so many political spaces because of my own, you know, association with like a student organizing when I was in college and stuff like that, and being in leftist spaces that kind of created like a political home for me that also was at the same time simultaneously growing my music career. So it kind of, they grew like together. And that was a lot of the community that was supporting me throughout my, you know, growth as a musician. And so a lot of the, you know, early conferences and stuff that I was playing at and getting in front of people and like out in the community were like the National Students for Justice in Palestine conferences and like events thrown by Palestinian youth movement and, you know, different things that really like created a foundation of like a big community support for me. And then like from there, I've, you know, found myself playing like international gigs. And like, I recently just went to Cuba. I was invited by like the Cuban government to go perform. It was an incredible experience. And, you know, I was invited last year to go to Australia to go perform for World Pride. And that was a really awesome experience as well. And like for Cuba, actually, I was also invited because they recently had passed like a family law bill. And so like their queer organization in Cuba was throwing a big like gala. And they wanted to like represent like Palestinians. And so they asked like, do you know any queer Palestinians that you could bring over and like represent as and musicians that could play at the event? And so they were put in contact with me and then brought me over. So like all these experiences like have been growing now and have honestly been really incredible. I've like been so blown away sometimes by like, I can't believe this is actually happening. I'm here playing for this right now, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no.
I was going to back it up a couple steps. So like you started out as a bio major and then you ended up there. What was kind of like the in between there where you're like, I think I want to do this professionally, or did it just kind of happen?
Well, I first switched majors because I just was list. I would go from my oud lesson to like my chem class and be like, I hate this. I'm like, I'm miserable. I just want to stay in my oud lesson. And like, I kind of became like a bit obsessive about it, playing 5 hours a day, very much. I felt like I had something to prove in a way, because so many people, when I told that I was going to learn this instrument, were like, it's not like guitar, you know, you grew up, you didn't grow up back home, you didn't you don't know how it's supposed to be played, you know this, how it is, you know what it should be like, you know. They had a lot of skepticism, and that, I feel like that skepticism was like fuel for me, and I was just so, you know, hell-bent on proving even my own father wrong, that I like that I could play this instrument, and that I could be playing in a culturally competent way, even though I was not born in Palestine. So to me, that was like, it was a shift in my brain where I became like very obsessed about the instrument and just learning and like deepening myself in the tradition. And I think at some point I realized I'm not as into biology, and I'm not as into the idea of becoming a doctor, and that, you know. So when I decided to switch my major, it wasn't really even thinking like I'm going to be a professional musician. It was more on this route of like, well, there's this thing called ethnomusicology, which is like music anthropology. And worst case scenario, I'll just go do a master's and go do a PhD and try to become a teacher and try to teach music and whatever, you know. And then I think that I kind of realized that beyond the, I actually wanted to be a performer. I think I didn't want to just be writing about music. I didn't want people to just, I didn't want to write about other people playing music. As much as I love doing research, and I, you know, that's something I still enjoy doing, I think that I also love performing. And I think that like created a shift for me, like, and where I kind of dive deeper into the performance aspect of the tradition. And like, I started studying after finishing at UC Santa Barbara. I started studying with like musicians like Simon Shaheen. And we go to the camp constantly on the East Coast to like learn from these musicians. And I think that also really took my playing to like another level. And yeah, I think it's just, I just realized that, wow, this is just a different path that I want to go into. And, yeah. And then, yeah, I've, you know, started posting videos online, and one thing led to the next, and now find myself here. But,
yeah.
It was kind of not like with this intention of like, I'm going to do this. And it was just kind of an obsession type thing, mm-hmm. that I just had blinders on, and I was like, I just want to do this. I just want to do this, and ended up here. So yeah. Not a bad place, but definitely. Yeah. My whole family was like, what are you going to do? Like, they're like, the whole plan was like, you're going to hate your life. You wake up after 8 years and you'll be a doctor and it'll be okay. And like, you know, they had invented this whole thing, like, that I was going to plan. So when I jumped ship, you know, everyone was like losing. I'm the oldest child as well. So everyone was like, what's man. Going on?
Yeah, you jumped off a cliff in there.
Yeah. Definitely.
But you have landed in some beautiful places now. I love that you, I love that obsessions can serve such a purpose. Like, obsessions are good. This is a good obsession.
Yeah. Channeling your obsession the right way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think most musicians, I mean, dancers too, but I think like maybe musicians a little extra, especially if it's like a solo musician thing, are a little bit obsessed. Like, I think you have to be a little bit obsessive in order to be a good technical musician, you know? I mean, I feel that way as a dancer, but also like we're in social environments with what we're doing a little bit more. But you can still be obsessed in the social. Yeah.
No, I think it's any craft, you know what,
yeah.
You see anybody that's like perfected whatever craft that they've perfected, and you know that they've put in like hours and hours to perfect that craft, you know. And I think you don't see somebody's like practice time, you just see this like amazing performance, or you see this amazing dance, you see this amazing thing that just was that occurred, but you don't see all those hours that you put in. So I think it requires that like ability to like lock in and focus and just say, you know, like, yeah. No one's paying you to practice. No one's paying for that time. You know, it's really like your own, you know, efforts. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Like even in settings where you have guidance, like college or whatever, no one is standing over you saying, okay, you're going to start practicing right now.
Yeah.
That's always has to be self-driven.
Totally.
I guess that's what is a little bit different about a lot of dance training is like there often is a person, like there's more of a practice of like you go take class and there is a teacher there. There's, yeah. I mean, like some, it depends on the type of dance. Like for instance, like tap dancers do a lot of solo practice, but like I think a lot of dance where you need a sprung floor to do it, there's like an expectation that like somebody is watching you practice this thing. On a daily basis.
Yeah, that sounds really helpful.
I'm like that. I'm like, I wish somebody could be like, you know, my children be like harder.
Me too. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I do like that accountability. I think that's what's so nice about like jam sessions and why people like to have other, you know, musicians to play around and to like share that, have that collaboration with, because it's like that's, you know, accountability that you get to have with other people. That you don't necessarily get on your own.
And you're like, I don't want to suck the next time I play with these people, so I better get my shit together.
So true. So true.
Yeah.
That pressure alone will make you practice.
Yeah. Yeah, so do you want to talk about your new track? This is coming out in December, right?
Yeah. I'm really excited for this one.
So stoked. Yeah, tell everyone about it.
This one, it kind of happened really randomly. I've been messing around with the electric oud a lot, just because I got like guitar pedals and a looper, and so I was just like looping, you know, the electric oud with pedals and having fun with it. And I remember I just started looping, you know, some stuff, and then I was like, wait, this is kind of sick. And so then I came up with a melody line over it, and I was like, wait, I kind of like that. And so then I built a drum line over it, and then I just sent the beat to Muhammad al-Kurd, and I was like, can you write words for this? And he's like, okay. And like within 5 minutes, he had the words written and sent it back to me and was like, here's the words. And then we sat like within a day or so, I sat with it, and I'm thinking like, who's gonna sing this? Like, who's gonna sing this? I don't know. And like, I'm feeling like, I don't know who's gonna sing this. I'm like, screw it. Like, I'm gonna just try singing it, whatever.
Yeah.
And like, I put it and I was like, all right, I'm gonna try this. And I sent it back to Muhammad. And he was like, who's singing on this? You sound sexy. And I was like, what?
Damn.
And I remember seeing like, what? I was a little bit shook back, but then I remember sending it to a couple more people that gave me like really positive validation and feedback. And I was like, okay, maybe this is working. I don't know. So then I like, you know, was continuing to do draft after draft. And then like, eventually I was able to, you know, like finish the full version, and I sent it back to Muhammad. He wrote a second verse for it, and then we like I recorded the second verse, sent it back to him, and it kind of happened like within the matter of a week that we just like made this song with just, you know, trying, honestly just having fun. And that's honestly so the way that like Muhammad and I work with each other a lot of times, where it's just like I send him something, he's inspired by it, he'll send back something, or and then it happens really like organically, which I love, and I find that we have like a really awesome creative flow together, and so it really was just like a matter of a couple of days that the song came about. And I remember I was thinking like I want the rhythm to be a little bit upbeat and hyped, and so I kind of was like copying like a baile funk Brazilian rhythm and like the on the Wait. But I played Rebeque, so and I like, you know, built that up a little bit. And so like the rhythm itself is, it feels like it has a different groove to it, which is cool. But then it's like it has the oud and electric oud, and then with you know, Arabic vocals obviously. So the vibe is, I feel like the vibe is pretty cool. And then when we heard the track back, I was like, actually this is sick. So
it is sick.
It is so good.
And I'm super excited for it, because it's, you know, the first time, for the longest time, like I didn't feel comfortable singing on tracks because I would hear my voice back and I'd be like, oh no, it was like way too high for my liking, and I would feel like very self-conscious about it. And then you know, I've been on T for 2 years now, 2.5 almost. I like, for the first time, I'm like actually being able to enjoy singing now, because I can like put playback and hear my voice and not being like, okay, turn it off, you know.
Yeah. Like, oh, this sounds like me.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
like I'm not completely dissociating when I hear it, so that's a great
That's a
feeling.
good
And
sign.
yeah.
Oh, that's incredible. And
Did
what's.
you, have you had like vocal training earlier? Like,
No, I haven't
wow.
had any training. I just, you know, the song is not like, it's not an incredibly hard song to sing. The
Yeah.
melody is a little bit simple, but I think that as I've been like more comfortable exploring singing, I've noticed different like things to watch out for, because it's like an instrument, you know, like
Yeah.
controlling it is half of it, and learning how to control is half of it. So I've recently begun that journey. It's a new journey, but like I'm excited about it, because there's been a lot of tracks that I've sat on for years where I'm like, I just want a singer on this, and I didn't have a singer to put on it because I didn't have a singer to put on it. And now I'm like, oh, maybe I'll be the singer.
Oh, you can go back to them, hopefully.
Yeah, there's a lot of
Yeah.
tracks I'm excited to go back to and excited to explore. So it's been like
Sweet.
a new window for me creatively, which is exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, and for anyone listening, we got previews, not to brag, but
You too, one day can
yeah,
listen.
you too. Can you describe what the song's about?
Yeah, definitely. Well, the song itself it's kind of like about be it's about heartbreak, but being on the other side of that, I think. And I, you know, a lot of what Mohammed and I went through last year, there were a lot of parallels in terms of heartbreak. And I think that we were, you know, very much aligned on that behalf. And so
Oh
like
wow. Yeah.
when we were writing this song, or he when you know I wrote the music, and when he was writing the words, he was like, you know, he let me know what it was, very poignant, and what it was for, and like for both of our experiences, you know.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, yeah, it's one of those things where it was tough, but actually like so grateful for being on the other side of it now, and for like being out of such a, you know, painful and unhappy experience. And like I think that, yeah, just the song is just kind of highlighting, you know, how resilient you can be, I guess, and how you coming through the other side of heartbreak, and how good that feels. It's almost like a why did you do this to my heart song, but a screw you kind of, you know, like
Yeah.
I don't give a shit
That's
anymore
such a great. That's the
about
best
it.
feeling once you get
Yeah.
there and you're like, "Oh, this is what healing feels like. I have a little
Yeah.
bit of spite in there and it feels really
Totally.
nice."
Totally. Yeah. Like that, being on that, it's very like liberating. And I think that's kind of like what the song is about. Just like feeling good and being like, yeah, kind of like screw you, I'm on the other side and I feel so much better.
Yeah. We just talked to someone yesterday for the podcast. That on an episode that'll come out soon, about how like anger really propels a person forward and like it's very intertwined with hope. So sometimes when you're able to feel like screw you, like I'm fucking pissed, like I'm angry, it also can you can look ahead and be like, oh, there's hope that like it's not just pure depression and sadness anymore.
Totally, yeah. And like
Yeah.
you feel like you can get through that, you're like, actually, I'm super strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do think there's a lot of power in that, and I think that's what the song is about.
It's
And we
beautiful.
actually filmed it. We filmed the video in on a trip in Mexico City.
Oh,
And
nice.
it was like we were staying at my partner's friend's place in Mexico City. And she's an artist, and she has this incredible, incredible apartment. But I mean, every like corner of the apartment is art. And we were just filming
Wow.
around with a camcorder, and we're like, the video should be here. This is where the video should be. And so, yeah, we in a cup matter of a couple of days, we filmed everything, and
My gosh.
that, like, came back to the Bay, and that's where we edited and stuff like that. But it was really, honestly, like very organic the way everything just came about, which was beautiful.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about the location because like the art on the walls
Yeah.
and yeah. I also really like the visible camcorder, like in the mirror shots. It felt like kind of like early 2000s home video style.
That's the vibe I wanted. Yeah. Like, 'cause I'm clearly, like, it's like self-produced, you know, and I didn't want it to, like, almost like I was giving the vibe that it was a higher quality video than it was. It's like, no, it is very much a self-produced video, and I wanted to feel like that, you know. So yeah, I think it accomplished that, and I was really happy with it.
Yeah, that's the best. When you have those connections that are not contrived, like things like this just happen naturally with you too, and that's the best thing to find.
Yeah, it was really special. Really special. Yeah, I'm super excited. I've been dropping like teasers here and there, and I've been getting like really good response from people, and that's made me feel even more confident. And I think that hopefully this is just gonna be like the beginning of a lot more tracks that I'll be singing on, and I'm actually working on a larger like album right now. There's like a bunch of tracks that have been not released yet that I'm super excited about dropping soon. So it's just, you know, a matter of getting it organized and stuff like that. But the this year was a lot of like, I think being on the other side of a very difficult year last year, I found myself in such a better creative place, and I've created so much more this year. And so even though it's been, you know, as we all know, a horrific year, and that being said, it's like, it's such a weird juxtaposition to feel that and on your like personal life, and then like also everything is burning outside. So it's just like there's it's been weird for sure. And it's actually been, you know, I was even like hesitant to drop the song and like drop the video, feeling like, oh, is this not the right time right now? And feeling like, you know, nothing is ever actually feels like the right time for us to like self-promoting and stuff like that. And so I feel like really cautious about that. But yeah, it's that being said, like I do feel like this year has been a lot more creatively exciting for me, and like been more I've been more open to like exploring different things and stuff like that. So I think I've been excited where the trajectory is going.
It's interesting you say that, because for me this year has been like one of my most healing years of my life, and like I found a sister I didn't know about. We've been connecting. I've really connected with my family in a new way, and stuff like that. And it's felt a little weird being like, okay, personal life has been just like so monumental, and then the juxtaposition of what's going on outside of that, it just feels, it's a really bizarre balance.
Totally.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I mean, it's.
I hear that.
Yeah, it's a lot.
How long have you and Muhammad been working together?
We actually we first met at the NSJP conference in Houston in 2017. We were both brought on to perform for Culture Night, actually. And that was the first time I heard Muhammad recite poetry, and I remember I immediately fell in love. I was like, this is some of the best poetry I've ever heard in my life. And at that time, he was like 18 years old. Had just shown up for Salam. He was super young. And I remember I just connected with him, and it was pretty immediate how quickly we became friends. And we were just like, we met at the conference. We were like, we should work together, we should collaborate. And then and I think it was 2018 that we did Belly Dancing on Wounds. So that was our poetry old EP that basically was our first project, my first project that I ever put out. And that one's, you know, to this day is still a very special project to me, because Muhammad's poetry is just, it's continued to inspire so many songs, like up until this point too. A lot of my songs were like originally, like I would put on a poem of Muhammad's, and I had a lot of recordings of him, you know, just reciting poetry or something that we were like, maybe we'll track, maybe we won't, whatever. And so sometimes I would just put on his poetry and like compose to his poetry. So, you know, it would trigger a lot of ideas and stuff. And that was how I put out a lot of my songs, of, you know, just being inspired by his poetry. So I think that there's like a very beautiful synergy we have creatively. And, you know, we wrote a song for my father. I wrote the words, and Mohammed wrote the words. I wrote the music, and we had my dad sing it. And it was like it was a political song, like a diss towards the Oslo Accords. And you know, it was a really special project that Mohammed was super intentional about, like composing something funny and sarcastic to fit my dad's personality, which was like very beautiful. And yeah, you know, I think that we've just continued to work with each other throughout the years and develop our creative like process together. And I hope it continues, because we have such a together.
No, yeah, it's cool that y'all connected when you were so young and have like continued to like kind of have that artistic synergy as you like mature as people and artists. And yeah.
Yeah, it's totally really cool. You're getting to grow up together.
Yeah.
Like, really, that's profound.
Yeah, it's very special. And I think, you know, so many musicians, like composers, in Arabic music tradition would use poets and like have poets that they would use as like inspiration, and poetry that they'd use as inspiration. So it's not like, this is just something that's been part of our tradition, you know. So many of like the lyrics of Kulthum's songs were like old poetry that was like that the composers adapted into music, into songs and stuff like that. So it's just something that I think has just been part of our tradition for sure.
Sorry, 1 second, I'm gonna get the door. Keep talking. We're okay. Done. Up to you.
Okay, we'll wait for you. Yeah, I really struggle with words, so it's nice. Mm. It's nice when you can like as a musician, when you can find someone who's good at it.
I also struggled in that same way, you know. That's why I send a beat to Mohammed, I'm like, please write something. I feel like it requires like a very special vulnerability to be able to write lyrics. I feel like that's tough. That I haven't figured out yet personally. And also, you know, being a poet, Mohammed's like literary devices that he's using, like the ways that he's like rhyming and stuff, he's very intentional about the stuff he's composing. And it's not, you know, he'll like explain to me, like, I want you to pronounce it like this and say it like this, because this is like the intention behind the meaning, you know. Arabic is very specific like that. And so it's, you know, something very, I think that, like, yeah, he's very intentional about.
Yeah, Nadia, I know you're really good at poetry. Like, we've talked about, like, you're really good at words stuff, and I'm terrible at anything relating to words. So,
like, but I'm not. I don't know what I'm doing, and, like, and that's kind of nice. I don't know if you feel this way about singing, but, like, I actually kind of, sometimes I write poetry, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I'm not formally trained in it or anything. And I think it's kind of nice to have a medium that's like that, where you're just like, I'm just doing it. Like, I don't know everything that's wrong. I don't have extensive craft. I have that and other stuff, and that's a different experience. But, like, there's something nice about kind of not being overtrained in something.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like, the overthinking can, like, destroy so much of the fun around
and enjoy
something. And also, like, the purpose behind it, too. Like, not everybody's trying to, like, get, like, the Pulitzer Prize or something like that. Like, we can also enjoy what the craft. I feel that about music, too. A lot of people are like, if I'm not Beethoven, like, I'm not going to even pick up an instrument. And it's like, no, you can actually just do this to enjoy yourself also. Yeah. You can actually just, like,
it's legal.
Yeah, you can, like, have fun, and you don't have to be the best at everything, and, like, you don't have to try to be a perfectionist, and you can just, you know, enjoy whatever capacity, like, this thing exists in for you. So I do think that we put really, like, intense, like, very, like, rigid standards sometimes, which are not helpful.
Right.
And I think sometimes being, like, trained in something, like, solidifies those things. It's like, I feel that with music sometimes. I'm like, I have to stop thinking, like, listening to music like I was a music student. You know,
yeah.
Whereas, like, detached.
So real. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
where like you take the heart out of, the emotion out of it, and you're just like analyzing, and it's not, and then you have to stop and think, like, what is this for?
Totally,
What am I
yeah.
doing this for?
Totally.
Yeah. Your family sounds great. Like, your dad being involved, and then I know before we start recording, we were talking about like your like other family members helping out with production. That's
Yeah.
so
Are you
cool.
trying to do a smooth lead into the story about getting by with your
I'm
Tanta?
telling you, you're the
Because
words person.
I
I
think you're
am trying
lost.
to do a smooth lead into
Well,
that.
do
You
you
are
want to talk
the
about getting high with your Tanta?
words.
I mean, I'd love to. I love that this is like an infamous story. Like I was hanging with Nadia, and I had told Nadia this story, and Nadia absolutely loved it, which is so funny because I mean, I guess it is a crazy story, right? Like Nadia
Yeah.
getting high with
I
her
still
Tanta.
remember it.
Yeah, I'm
So
gonna remember it now too.
basically like I have a family where like marijuana is not, I guess, the biggest deal in my family because like one of my uncles used to be a grower. So it's not like a very taboo thing. But I remember, you know, the first time I was in college and I went to my grandma and I was like, Teta, you know, like I want to tell you a secret. My grandma's a Gemini and so she loves secrets. So like you just have to say, Teta, I have a secret, and she's like, what? Like she's getting the tea from somebody that nobody else is. So she was in it. And I was like, Teta, like if I tell you can't tell my dad. She's like, I was like, all right. I was like, Teta, I just once in my life I want to try marijuana. And she was like, she like looks at me and she's like, you know, me too.
Oh my
Was like,
God.
let's try it, me and you together, one time and we'll never again. Just, you know, me and you. And she's like, but where are we gonna get it from? I'm like, don't worry, don't worry, I'll get it. So I wait for my jiddo because he had like this 12 o'clock noon nap that he always would take. So I waited for him to take his daily nap. And I went and I rolled a joint, went back to my tata. I was like, tata,
Oh
show
my
her the joint.
God.
And she was like, Allah. I'm like, yeah. And she's like, okay. And then she like looks at my sister and she's like, Giselle, dali. She like invites her along. And like she takes us, I'm not joking you, to the most perfect location in her backyard, like behind a shed, in between like the shed and the bushes, where I'm like, Tata, what have you done back here? Like,
She
why do you know
knew
this?
she was
Like,
waiting
why do
for
you
this
know this
moment.
spot? Seriously. And like I grabbed the joint and I'm just trying to light it. She's like, Mish hick. She like grabs it from my mouth. She starts lighting it. I'm like, damn. He was on it. And then she, you know, she used to smoke like cigarettes like back in the day. And so she was supernatural about it. We're smoking the joint, whatever. We finish. And at some point she's like, your eyes. I'm like, Tita, your eyes. And she starts busting up laughing. She's like, and like we go back inside and like she's diabetic, but she opened up this like box of Turkish delights and like ate half of them. I was like,
My
Tita. I'm
God.
so stressed. I'm like, Tita, you can't do that. Like started calling her relatives, just like so, and being like hilarious, like just having the best time. And to this day, if I'm like, Tita, remember when you did that? She's like, no. No, I don't remember. Like
Even though
super
I'm
angry.
questioning now if that was her first rodeo.
No, for sure. She's
No.
such a no, I wouldn't put it past her, honestly. So funny.
God, but
Everyone
this.
was super jealous. Like I called everybody, I was like, I smoked with Tate. Everyone's like, no.
Oh my
All my cousins.
God.
That was it.
Yeah, she was waiting for that moment. She had the spot already picked out.
Like she
Oh
knew
my
exactly.
God, I love her.
Yeah, I respect that.
I
I'm like, you know
respect that
what?
so much.
Totally.
Thanks for sharing that with the people.
Of course. We'll see.
Iconic
That
story.
was really important.
No, I mean, yeah, it's good so people don't think that, you know, we everyone I feel like everyone sees my family and they're like, oh my God, wow, your family's so fun and chill and da da da. And I'm like, everyone, has one image of Arabs, you know what I mean? A very particular image, and I think that my family does a good job. Like, actually, you know.
Blows
that out of the water. Even in the families that are very uptight, there's always one or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, for us, hashish, like, it's, like, hashish culture, and, like, it's, I don't know, it's part of it. Like, my uncle used to listen to Kulthum all the time, and, like, the person that was, like, screaming, being like, Allah, hazimahada, you know, the guy screaming and, like, losing his head in the recording, and my uncle would be like, that guy, he's high on hash. Like, every time, like, convinced, like, he's the guy losing his mind.
Him.
Yeah, and, like, so, like, there's, this connotation that, like, you know, thought of music and, like, hash culture and, like, marijuana culture is, like, very much associated, which is funny.
When I think a lot of families are, like, yours, your family is just really open, it sounds like, with each other.
Yeah.
And, like, I know shit about individual family members I'll never share on here, but, like, but, like, they just, it's very closed. Like, everyone's very closed about it. We all just, like, everything's unspoken. Mm. But, yeah, it's, like, people do shit.
Right. Yeah. It's, like, they're doing it no matter what.
How much do you just, like, air it out is the, is the question. And, like, just be, like, yo, let's acknowledge all this shit versus, like, pretend otherwise.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, my parents are, like, we're kind of even, like, the more, like, straight edge of, like, their siblings. Like, I'm, like, from my dad's siblings, you know? Like, he doesn't smoke weed, like, the way his brothers do, for example. And I remember, like, telling my dad, like, okay, well, like, but I, you know, I want to smoke weed, Dad. And he'd be like, nah, okay. It's like, he's not, like, he wasn't, like, you know, he doesn't smoke weed himself, but it's not, like, you know, he's super uptight about it in that way. So, no, they're very, like, chill and...
that's great.
I appreciate that aspect of it. I remember I came back from college and I was like, listen, guys, either you're gonna let me smoke in the backyard or, like, you're gonna have to go do it in my car and, like, some cop is gonna pull me over and whatever. They're like, go to the backyard.
Yeah.
I was like, just like that.
Yeah.
So
I was telling Nadia about a relative of mine whose mom is always like, just smoke in my backyard. Like, we were literally talking about that before the podcast. And her mom's just like, I want you to be safe. So
I mean,
do all your shit in my backyard.
Yeah. That's the funny thing. Like, everyone's doing whatever they want anyway. So.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, are you going to give the person a safe spot for it or not? Because it's going to happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, where can people find your music?
That transition's crazy. I thought, you can find my music. you can find my music on wherever you listen to music. Meaning, like, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, Tidal, whatever. I put it up on all platforms, and the song is gonna be coming out early December, in a few weeks, and that's when the video will come out too. So I'm super excited about it. And I'm gonna be dropping a lot of stuff soon, so I'm just really excited for what's coming up next.
So stoked. And what are your feelings about us putting a snippet in our intro, or is that too soon?
I mean,
okay,
good. I would love that. That's
okay.
That's awesome.
Okay, sweet.
Thank you.
Thank you. This was so much fun. I'm so glad you came on. And yeah, you all can find us at The Queer Arabs on Instagram, Twitter, and maybe soon Blue Sky. I don't know. And Facebook. And you can email us at thequeerarabs@gmail.com.